Welcome back, Seahawks fans, to the newest episode of the Seahawks Nest Podcast. I'm your host, Asano, joined as always by the Asterian to my tab. It's Kevin Garber. Kevin, how you doing?
I will tell you one thing, but do something else.
Straight up liar. All right. So today we are, in terms of Seahawks news, okay, we had some cuts. We had some cuts that we have to talk about. So, all right,
and safeties are gone. We have to talk about.
Safeties are gone.
Yep.
How do you feel? We did not. This happened in the last week, right? I put it in my notes, and then I realized, yes. Like, did we talk about this last week? Okay, good, good. All right, good, good, good.
So we talked about how it was likely that we ended up losing them, but we didn't talk about because that had been happening. So I think this is an important step, which is if we had kept our safeties, it really limited our flexibility for what we could do, especially to change our defense. And with the roster we had and not being able to make a lot of changes, the odds of being significantly better than last season were low. If we have to take like one step back to take two steps forward, this is the type of move you have to do. If we're just running it back, then we might as well have run back Pete. So I think I think Pete Carroll leaving made this make a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think Diggs still has something in the tank and like we'd be
Diggs good is good.
Team with him, but I think it just makes sense that with him leaving, it's kind of it's a chance to kind of turn over the defense.
If you need a strong coverage safety, you could do a lot, or a guy who can play nickel quarterback too in a pinch, you could do a lot worse than Quandre Diggs. I think the problem is that last season he was being asked to cover up for a lot of inefficiencies in the entire defense. He led the team in tackles, which is never a good sign for a defense if you're free your deep line free safety. Yeah, he tweeted it. He was like, "This is not good, guys," and he's correct. That's 100% agree. It's not good if he does it. Jamal Adams, like, unfortunate. Someone made a really funny list of his top five moments in a Seahawks uniform on Reddit, though, Kevin. Can I read it for you?
Happy.
Starting at number five, literally knocking himself unconscious, performing a routine tackle in his first game back against the Giants, and then verbally abusing the doctor. Number four, getting absolutely torched by Cooper Kupp in coverage and costing us the Rams playoff game. Number three, missing an easy sack on Russell Wilson and causing himself a season-ending injury in the first game of the season. Number two, verbally abusing a reporter's wife on Twitter. Number one, easy interception hitting him directly in the face during prime time after saying, "I'm the greatest of all time," during his Monday Night Football intro.
Yeah, rough.
I just want to say to Jamal, I wish him the best. Honestly, the first season was really good, the 9.5 sacks, and
yeah.
the he was just like a Swiss Army knife for our team. But there's just – it was the injury completely sapped him of his ability to run, and he is just not what he used to be in any way, in addition to the fact that he seems to be just he's unbearably grating.
Agent 3's final move as a Seahawk was to also get cut and provide a smokescreen for how bad cutting Jamal Adams looks. Once again – the Russell Wilson trade paying off in erasing our Jamal Adams mistakes over and over.
$85 million in dead money for the Broncos. That's insane.
That's a lot.
It's split over two. They're going to split it over two seasons. But like, so if you look at the top dead cap hits of all time, Russell Wilson is number one. And then the next two combined are less than that. And then I think Russell Wilson's also number five for when we traded him.
Russell Wilson's dead cap is the U.S. military spending of dead caps.
Yeah, he's the king of dead. He's the dead cap king. He collects so much money for doing nothing. And now, it's like that meme where Drewski's like, "Who want me?" And then the only choice is no. that's Russell Wilson right now. So yeah, the other thing, Will Dissly got cut as well. It's kind of obvious. It was an obvious place they could go to create cap room.
He could come back on a cheaper deal. It wouldn't be surprising.
Exactly. Don't think it precludes him coming back, but it might. Great job by him for coming back from all the injuries, the adversity, all that stuff to still be a pretty consistent, solid performer year after year. He never really broke out in a way, though, that makes me think we have to have him. We also cut Brian Monet, another obvious cap casualty.
Yeah, a lot of money saved for somebody who didn't even play last season. And when he does play, he's a situational run stopper.
And then finally, Nick Ballore was cut as well.
Which we all saw coming. Today. He was getting paid a lot for what he does.
Yeah. I mean, he's good. He's a good player, but he's kind of expensive for what he is. And I hope that he finds success at his next stop because he said this is not the end for him. Tyler Lockett restructured, which means that we'll get about three more years of Tyler Lockett and then see. He is really close to the Seahawks all-purpose yards record. He's like, I think, like a 800.
He's 800 and something away. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yep. This is it. This might be his last year. The way they structured the contract makes it seem like it might be it.
It's either this year or next year. Says last year. The third year that they added is just a void year, basically.
Yeah, they're not gonna. He's probably not gonna play on that third year, and unless he's like something crazy happens, he's not do anything. All right, that's basically it. Schneider did an interview, said he's in negotiations with Leonard Williams agents, sorry, and said that he's a priority for us, so we'll see there. Obviously, he's the IDL market's kind of clearing out. Matabuika signed a long-term deal, Chris Jones signed a long-term deal. It does make Leonard Williams market pretty hot. If you want a really strong interior defensive lineman, he's kind of becoming your dude, and so we'll see what happens there.
Well, you had a take based on his age that you talked about in the Discord about what that means for signing him. Did you want to elaborate on that here a little bit?
Yeah, I just don't feel like... Okay, so the Seahawks have to feel one of two ways. Either they're trying to slam a window open right now and get to the Super Bowl with Geno in the next 2 years. That's hard. I could see them try to do it, but it's hard. If you do that, you probably have to overpay Leonard Williams, and that means years 3 and 4 of that contract are going to be pretty painful in terms of like what we're getting from him on the field and also like what the potentials are. Cause he's going to demand like 4 or 5 years and in the neighborhood of, you know, $90 to $100 million. And that's a lot of money to dedicate to, you know, I don't know how, after all these cuts and stuff, it does feel like this year is kind of the turnover year. And do you really want to bring in a 29-year-old player on a 4-year contract to be a part of your turnover roster? Feels like that's the move you make next year, right? So
it feels like if you kept Quandre, you might be making that move and you cut Adam so that you could make the move. But yeah, when you cut Quandre, it makes that move feel less likely unless they think that he can kind of be the bridge player that kind of is the centerpiece of that next line.
It's going to become a if the price is right situation. Like,
yeah,
the same way we lost Clowney because we just were unwilling to budge from our kind of demands, I think the same things might happen with Leonard Williams, where we say, hey, man, we'll give you 370. And then he's like, well, I got these guys telling me they'll give me 490. And we're like, okay, well,
good luck. Looks like you're playing for 490. All right.
I'm really proud of you. All right. What level of betrayal are you at for the KJ Wright as the assistant coach for the San Francisco 49ers?
Who?
Yeah. Oh, that bad, huh? I don't know her. That's where you're going.
With I don't know who you're talking about.
KJ Wright is this. I'm just mad that he kind of made it sound like for a long time that he did not want to be an assistant coach. And then he became an assistant coach for like my least favorite football team. That's it. I'm happy that he's got a coaching job. That's good for him. He seems like a guy who loves football and loves the teaching part and talking about football. It just
let me get this completely straight.
Just
on a human level. On a human level, like, just go live hurtful. Your best life. But who?
It's hurtful a little bit. Kevin, we kept our favorite guy, Dwayne Eskridge. He renegotiated his contract down to $1.055 million and kept his bonus, saving the Seahawks a grand total of like $900,000 in cap.
I like this move because our roster officially needs a CJ Procise. And he's filling that spot, which means we don't have to draft a new guy that seems good but gets injured and never sees the field. And so I really think for roster depth reasons, maybe next year we can draft a guy who seems good and never plays.
Did you see how many receptions that he has in the Discord? But before I ask you this.
Yes.
But you did? It's, okay, it's all right. Because I was going to say, like, try to guess how many
this one. And it's, how many, it's so bad.
Try to guess how many receptions he has in 3 seasons.
Is it like 17?
It's 17. The number is so much lower than you expect. It's like, you think like, oh, it's got to be like 40, you know, 30. But like,
I would guess
what's the most memorable D. Eskridge play?
He got a concussion after he got pushed out of bounds on the sideline?
Sure. Like, there's not really isn't one, in my opinion. So, yeah. All right. And then finally, Kevin, there is in the old rumor mill, there is a thing going around. I think it is Dan Graziano says, he's hearing that there are some of the Baltimore players are being linked to Seattle in order of likeliness to come here. Queen number one, Jadeveon Clowney number two, Geno Stone number three. Do you want one, two, three, or none of those players?
Depending on how much we're paying for Geno Stone or Jadeveon Clowney, sure, Queen's going to cost a lot more than I want to pay him. His skill set does not, like, they're saying he's going to be making well north of $10 million a year. I don't see a player that's worth north of $10 million a year. And so if we get Clowney as that, oh yeah, this is a guy who's going to be good against the run. McDonald figure out how to get some pass rush out of him. And he can come in and be like our fourth edge. Okay, cool. That's okay. He stops the run really well. Geno Stone, I feel like his skill set overlaps with Julian Love a lot, but also having two Julian Loves isn't a bad safety set. But with his interceptions last season, I feel like he's going to get paid a lot more than I want to pay him.
Hey, you want to feel sick to your stomach?
Mm-hmm.
The PFF predicted contract for Patrick Queen. Do you want to?
It's like $17 million a year.
18.13, 4 years, 72.5. And I mean, he is a really good football player, but he also plays next to Roquan Smith. So it's really hard for me to like square that circle where it's like, yeah. And he has a unique skill set too. Jadeveon Clowney's 1.9 and Geno Stone 2.13, which I'd be totally down with either.
I would either the Clowney deal or the Stone deal. I would rather slam my hand in my bathroom door than do the Patrick Queen deal.
Yeah, I think it's got to be closer to like 12 for us to even start that conversation.
Once again, I wouldn't want that deal.
Unique skill set. He did improve. He has improved every year too, which matters a little bit to me. I love progress.
It's like I think your Roquan Smith comment is a really important one though. Roquan Smith brings down the cognitive load of other linebackers a lot.
Roquan Smith is so good. He could do everything.
Yeah.
He's so good. So, yeah, the Seahawks organization, according to Jason LaCanfora, views Jeremy Chinn as an option to play the safety big nickel DB role that Kyle Hamilton had in Baltimore. I think that's kind of cool. LaCanfora, I don't know if he's like a great source at all anymore. I have not heard his name in a really long time, but Jeremy Chinn is big.
I think he's a logical fit for the spot, but I also think McDonald's has shown that he can – the way that you play defensive back is more important than your measurables for the way he likes that position.
He wants so every guy.
Witherspoon could easily play that way as well.
He wants every guy on his team to cover.
Yeah.
Too. Which is yeah.
Yeah, if you didn't like defensive linemen dropping, as we already said when we hired him, we apologize in advance for this season. But the thing about it is when McDonald has defensive linemen drop, he has them drop in a way that makes sense instead of just this is the way that we saw on tape that somebody else did this.
All right. And now tomorrow is the opening of free agency. So what's your big free agency prediction for the Seahawks tomorrow? Do you got anything?
My big free agency prediction is that we sign role players in positions that we lack starters so that we don't have to draft any one position.
Do you think we'll get a wave one guy like Draymond Jones like last year, or do you think we'll be in the later waves?
I think we'll be in the later waves. I think we're going to be shopping in the later waves.
Okay, perfect. So how about you?
I think if we get an early wave, it's going to be because we re-sign Williams. That's the only wave one I think would be my
probably correct. I agree with that statement. All right, let's get into it. We're going to talk today about the offensive linemen in next year's draft, the offensive tackles and interior offensive linemen, and we'll start with the tackles. So we're going to do our top five tackles and then head into the interior offensive linemen. All right, number one for me, Joe Ault. It's impressive when someone you know is a good athlete just from the tape also goes out to the combine and just like absolutely crushes it. And Joe Ault. The only thing I could say about him is he's really tall. So sometimes that can cause struggles for him. So he has a few technical areas that he has, but he has continued to polish them out. He was like much worse in 2002 than he was in 2023. And he continued to improve. So I suspect that his growth curve will just continue, especially considering his like athletic prototype.
Do you think he came in as a tight end recruit?
That does not surprise me, but nope. But I know I did not know.
But
that.
Also
that
like is... he's an enormous human being, and him playing tight end is also scary. So to give an idea to underline your point about his athleticism, the threshold for being an edge rusher is a 7.33 cone. Like if you run under 7.3, then they're you can bend the corner enough that you can like kind of threaten that way.
Those guys that run like 7.3s, like and especially like late round draft picks, that's like a key to finding like the late round good guy. Like Max Crosby was a late round 7.3 cone. So yeah,
Joe Alt runs a 7.313 cone. That's so gross. At 6'9", 321.
Yeah, he's just huge. It's like, dude, come on, man, calm down. He's nasty too. Plays with an edge.
My comp is Andrew Whitworth too. I think like he has enough natural power and everything that he's a guy who's going to have probably a pretty gentle age curve and just be a really hard guy to get past forever. Like he might never be the best left tackle in the league, but he'll just like be a really consistently high level guy for a long time, probably.
Another thing I loved about Joe Alt is that his hands are really good too. The feet sometimes are hit or miss, you know, like I said, like sometimes he would lose leverage a little bit because he's really tall and it can be hard on tall guys. If your feet are not perfect, sometimes you lose, but he never loses with the hands. Like his hands are just incredible and he's a great athlete. He'd be a great fit for the grub offense. So if he falls to 10, which he won't, or 16, I mean, then that would be a great pick. All right.
If he gets caught with a gas mask full of weed on draft night and falls to us, we'll be very happy to take him.
Number two, I have three guys that are extraordinary close. Did you also have Alt number one before
Alt is my number one, and then my next tier is four players and makes the rest of my top five.
Okay, so I have three guys really close, and then I have a tier break after that. So let's hear your number two because I'm interested because it's kind of hard to pick. So I'm gonna let you go, and then I'll tell you if I'd agree.
So my number two guy is Talise Fuanga, out of Oregon State.
That's my number three. Very good.
I think. Okay.
Such great athletic.
He's so big too, like he is huge, and in that like bright orange uniform, he looks even bigger in the Oregon State tape.
It's crazy that him and Joe Alt are like 320 plus pounds and 6 foot. He's 6 foot six, and Joe Alt 6'9", and these guys both put up crazy testing numbers. Another like insane testing numbers. Guy.
Yeah, 32 inch vertical. That's gross.
He didn't do the agilities. So like I'm like kind of withholding like full judgment until I can see that three cone. Cause you know,
but his feet look quick on tape.
They do. And, but all it's like the thing about Alt was, it was a big ball move, you know, like you see to go out there and be like, hey, you know what? I'm running this three cone at the combine. Cause lots of guys are scared. Cause you can definitely hurt your stock by running a slow three cone in the as a trenches guy in there. And that's not to say Fuaga would have ran a slow three cone. I mean, judging by his 10 yard split, he probably would have done fine.
I think it says something about Joe Alt as a person that he did every test, including the bench, which almost everyone skips. He's like, no, any day, anytime.
Yeah. He was, it kind of put him number one for me that he just like kind of, I don't know, came out there and did it all. Fuanga's
a right tackle. He's only really played right tackle. He's played right guard a little bit. And there's some question about whether he'll eventually be a guy that gets moved to guard. He reminds me of Darnell Wright from last year's draft, or like Roger Saffold, where maybe if he like racks up a couple of leg injuries, he might move inside. But he just has really good traits as an offensive lineman. He's always going to be a road grading run blocker, and he has good enough hands that he explosive will be a good pass blocker.
Explosive and aggressive. He gets his hands on people and he's heavy. Once he touches you, you're just like done for. It's like if he touches you, it's over. His arm length is a little shorter than Alt, which is Alt. That's like one of the knocks on Alt, is he's like a middle of the road arm length guy. And then Fuaga is sometimes really over aggressive to the point where he like accidentally takes himself out of the play. But he's really good. And I have him at number three. You ready for my number two?
Yep.
Troy Fautanu.
Yeah, he's my number three.
He's so good. It hurts
so well.
it's like, yeah, maybe he is a little too small to play tackle. His hands are pretty small.
He has 34 and a half inch arms.
That's it. He measured in with 34 and a half inch arms, and his explosive testing was incredible. I think at the end of the day, someone's going to draft him and play him at left tackle, and they're going to be handsomely rewarded. And the best part about him is if you can always move him all around. He is versatile. Yep. He has shown versatility throughout his career. He has shown a willingness to be versatile. This is, I think, one of the best players in the whole draft.
He has the best mirror in the draft. I think his footwork and his mirroring is the best out of anybody. When you watch him out there, he's like, he's kind of a jackrabbit. Like he covers a lot of space and he can vary his steps. Like a lot of offensive linemen, they have to either keep a really wide base or like, you know, there's like hip flexibility questions or something. He looks smaller on tape because he moves quickly and because the dude playing guard next to him was massive. And I think that kind of like people who watched his earlier tape were like, well, he's not that big. It's like, no, he's playing next to the Jolly Green Giant.
The last thing for me is that I think there's a bunch of little things that he can clean up to get even better.
Yeah.
So like, I want to see guys that have like a little bit of a projection curve, that especially guys that are as good of an athlete as this guy. And while he was dominant in college, sometimes he would get a little bit washed out of play. Sometimes he would hit, what he was doing would feel just like a little undisciplined, maybe.
His hand technique could get better, which is like a common thing for college guys and can really next level your play in the NFL if your hands get better.
Yeah. And so, and he's like, but like you said, mirror pass protector, this is the best one, which is why I had him at number two. Like, I completely agree. As a pass protector, this is the best one. That's why I had to bump him all the way up to number two. So then I think we have the same number four, probably.
Olufoshanu. Yeah.
Yes. Very good player. His athletic testing is crazy, again, but he didn't do the agilities. So we'll see. But a 32-inch vert for a guy who's 6'6", 312.
Did you see his hand size?
Yeah. Yeah. This guy can
got baby really hands. Get up.
Yeah. His 2nd percentile hands.
and a quarter inch hands on a guy who's 6'6" is kind of funny. But you can actually see that sometimes in his hand technique. Like, he has a little bit of trouble with his punch and grab consistency, but he's also a really smooth move, smooth mirror. His pass pro is really, he might be the best pass protector, but his run blocking is not very good.
I think Fatana is the best pass protector, but this guy, my thing with him is that he gives up too much ground. You are a good enough athlete. Someone needs to get in his ear and be like, hey man, you are a good enough athlete. You can beat these guys. You do not need to give up so much ground to these edge rushers because he gives up all the ground and then he does really good. And it's like, you know, you need to try to create that pocket.
Bring the fight to him.
Push that out there and be aggressive. And
he's a build up his anchor. Like, he's not as thick through the lower body as he could be. He's a guy who, if he gets some conditioning, everything, his critiques are a lot of the ones I had for Charles Cross. Anton Harris from Harrison from last year's draft was the same way, where it's like he just needs to get thicker in the lower half and really bring some power to his game.
Once again, though, he can continue to grow. I think all four of the guys that we talked about should go off the board before we pick. That not to say they will, but they all have the talent and skill to get off the board before.
If any of those four guys are there at 16, I am happy to pick them. Like, even Fashanu, who I think is basically just a pure left tackle, screw it, pick him, put him on the right. Don't care.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you're just like, hey, well, we're bumping Cross inside now. Like, we're just getting big boy over here and making it happen. I think I completely agree. And because Fatanu, we can be flexible. You know, if we pick Fatanu or...
Yeah, he could play left guard. He could play right tackle. Fuaga,
too.
Could play right tackle or right guard, yeah.
That's why I'm curious, because I have a lot of these other guys very close to get. The next, like, four or five guys, I'm into kind of... not four.
I have a guy who is above those guys for
me. Okay, then I want to hear, who's the guy who separated himself?
My number five is J.C. Latham out of Alabama.
Okay.
6'6", 342, 35 and an eighth inch hand, arms, 11 inch hands. He didn't do the athletic testing.
No, he did a 40, but it's from last summer. What time do you think that this 40 is? I don't believe this 40, by the way. What time do you think they say that... That 342-pound offensive lineman.
4.85.
I will tell you this. If he runs
a 4.85, he's my
at the pro
guy.
Day, move him up to – we can move him up to three. We can move him up to two. Like, yeah, I agree. But I just don't believe that. That is like the Roma Dunze 4.31. Like, it is a mythical creature that sits outside of the realm of reality.
No, if I had to guess, he's going to run something really similar to like Fuanga's 5.13. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be somewhere that, which is a good time for a 340-pound dude. Like, he can get out and move, and as a linear athlete, he's good. He's really big, really long arms. His feet can be a little heavy, which is why I think he might end up getting moved into guard.
In general, he's just heavy. 360 pounds. He's heavy in general.
But yeah, yes, good punch, heavy hands. If he puts his hands on you, you're just dead. Like, that's just the way it is with him. He has excellent anchor, power rusher. Like, if you have power moves and pass rush, just don't even try on him. Like, your power guy, just align him on the other side. He's not getting through Latham.
I actually have him just outside, and it mostly because he was kind of a penalty machine.
Yes.
In college.
But he's also like 20. That's the other thing, is he's so young.
But there is a development curve. He should go in the first round. I just don't have him on the same level as the first four guys we talked about. And I have him on the same level as my number five, which is Amarius Mims.
And both of his snaps were really impressive.
Yes. Thank you. I understand.
He's my number six. So, yeah.
He broad jumped 111 inches at 6'8", 340.
Oh, yeah. This dude was built in a lab. 340 pounds and a 507 40.
I don't understand how you run a 5 second 40 at 6'8", 340. And
36 inch arms. This dude's just a gigantic. Yeah.
This guy is insane. Plays a little too tall, but I would give him a shot 100%. This guy is huge and really good. But, you know, like I said, for me, him and Latham are very close together, along with I have Tyler Guyton in that same.
So my next tier clump is Mims, Guyton, and Suyumate out of BYU. Because I think Mims, Guyton, and Suyumate are all really athletic.
Why couldn't Jordan Morgan just have like a little bigger arms? I love the tape and I like the athletic testing, but his arms are just like...
You know what makes me double sad though?
It's like
all the things 18%... that he has trouble with are things that are going to be a problem when he moves inside to guard.
Yeah, he's not going to be... No, he needs to be a tackle.
Yeah, he went from like, this guy's like late round one to like, this guy might be out of my top 50.
Yeah, it's just like he does a really good job like positioning his body well and moving really quickly. And I was like super into the Jordan Morgan experience. And then, he just measured in short and then has not impressed in like the pre-draft process. That's not to say he won't make it, but, you got it. Long arms not having long arms makes it hard for any OT.
Going back to Mims real quick. So less than 700 snaps in the last two seasons and their injury concerns. But he's so projectable. That's the thing, is his technique is incredibly raw, but he's flashed every single thing you want to see a high-level tackle do. So it's like, somebody's going to pick him in round one, just because if the Eagles could pick him and stash him for a year, that's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that is going to happen. But if he gets started as a rookie, which he probably will, because he's going to go in the first round, he could have some massive growing pains for a couple years.
All right. Ready for interior offensive lineman?
Did you want to do like a couple down the board guys real quick, if you have any?
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay, give me yours. Give me one of yours first. I accidentally closed the tab.
Okay.
Because I was already preparing for the next
player. I have a classification of down the board guys.
Okay.
And I'll talk more about one of them. So Matt Goncalves out of Pittsburgh. Christian Jones out of Texas, Javon Foster out of Missouri, and Roger Rosengarten out of Washington are all kind of the same guy, where they have a really good amount of college experience. They're kind of like average size tackles. They might not have like plus movement or something, but they're probably going to either be really solid swing tackles for like a long time, or they're going to have like just enough of everything where they're the guy who comes in and they're a C+ at everything and end up being a really solid like Jeff Schwartzy piece of a good offensive line. So
I was watching him, I was like, this is the kind of guy who if your offensive line is good, he's fine. And if your offensive line is bad, he is like absolutely a black hole.
Yes, if he's the left tackle on a bad offensive line, he'll be like one of the most poorly graded left tackles in the NFL. But if he's like the right tackle on a good offensive line, he'll be in the top half of all tackles in the NFL. Yes. He's a barometer for your O-line.
I don't know. I feel like after you get outside my top 10, there's not any guys I would be like excited to draft. Does that make sense?
Who's the guy out of South Dakota State? Garrett Greenfield. Did you Garrett watch
Greenfield?
Him? Mm-mm. His athletic testing was gross. 6'6", 311, 33 and a half inch arms, 38 and a half inch vertical, 113 vertical. Broad.
Mm-hmm. This guy can get after it. But like so, he's, I heard the scouting report said he's really raw And
so I watched him because I was watching their right guard, and he was playing right tackle, and he doesn't have the finish you want. He lets guys into his chest too often. He kind of reminds me of if Trevor Penning wasn't a penalty machine, which that's a guy I would take in the fourth or fifth round. I just didn't want him in the first round because that turned out to be the correct take.
That makes sense. Yeah, and then Mason McCormick, the South Dakota State. That's your wait.
He's a guard.
17-inch red. Yeah. Oh, that's a. I'm on my guards already. No. Okay. He played OT at North Dakota State, but he's not going to make it as a tackle, right?
No.
You don't think? Just too short arms, too small. Okay. Let's go. Let's go to let's go to guards and centers then. Here we go. Number one, Kevin. Are you with the hive mind? You got Jackson Powers Johnson, number one.
Yes, Jackson Powers Johnson is my number one interior offensive lineman.
He moves fast.
He's really good, and he plays guard and center.
Can I tell you my favorite Jackson Powers Johnson thing, though?
Sure.
He has a hamburger named after him, signature burger named after him at a restaurant. It's called the Big Jack's Burger at Elkhorn Brewery in Eugene, Robinson. You ready?
Oregon?
Oregon, sorry. Eugene, Oregon. Did I say Eugene Robinson?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, ouch, weird. Okay. The Big Jack's Burger has a lot of stuff on it. It's a big man delight. This is what he said. This is a quote. So start with the
bun. I like the line, really, big man delight.
Really great brioche bun. Under that, we got a little bit of barbecue, some queso, some mac and cheese, pulled pork, some bacon, two patties, and a bun under there. If you can finish that, the meal is probably free. It's not. It's like $22. But the I saw a picture of the Big Jack's Burger, and I will say it looks pretty, pretty good. And I'm not going to lie. I was thinking about putting it in number two, and then when I saw this interview, I was like, nope, that'd be a mistake. That would be a mistake. I'm going to keep him at number one. So, yeah, Jackson Powers Johnson is good. He moves good. His tape is Oregon. The Oregon tape is just enjoyable in general. Like just watching Oregon games, they played like a moderately pro style offense, but they just threw like 1,000 screens, so it's really easy to see what was going on all the time.
The thing I would say, like, okay, so his strengths are everything except for what I'm about to name as a flaw. Like size, athleticism, all that, anchor, none, don't worry about any of that. That's all like good to plus. Footwork, all that. So he always tries to punch and knock guys out of the play. He needs to get better at trying to sustain a block. In the NFL, he might struggle his first season or two where he's trying to just pancake everyone. And so he'll get to the second level and good linebackers will use his aggression to like kind of shed him when he goes to like hit them.
His hand placement is like not great. Where do you think he goes in the draft? A lot of people have him towards the end of round one. Do you think that's fair?
Yes. Okay. I think he'll go between like 22nd and 32nd.
To me, he feels like an early round two guy, but I see him ranked at the end of round one, kind of everywhere.
If you look like, so I think the top two centers in this draft are the kind of guys that should be the top center in a draft. And usually that guy goes like, you know, like Travis Frederick, I think went like 31st. Nick Mangold went like 29th. Like those really obvious good centers in a good draft tend to go in that range to like deep playoff teams that are looking to upgrade at that spot. The only thing that could make it a little earlier is if the Eagles decide they want to take him instead of moving Juergens or like they'll have basically three guys that could play center on the interior of their line, and I could see them just deciding to do that.
Who do you have? This is the question of the century right here. Who do you have at number two?
Okay.
Because I feel like after this, these guys after this, they all have things that I like and don't dislike. They all have pros and cons, and none of them feel like a guy you should be taking super early.
So I will say my top three guys are all guys that I think will go either round one or early round two. My top three guys.
Who else is going? I'm into that. I don't believe it at all.
My so number two guy
on the other side of this
you
one.
Might not have as an interior offensive lineman.
Okay, that's probably why you're moving guys inside. I like this though.
Graham Barton.
Okay, yeah, I had him as a tackle.
I think Graham Barton is 32 7/8 inch arms, and when you look at his athletic profile and everything, he's just kind of an ideal zone blocking guard. And so I think he moves inside because it's just it's kind of a perfect fit for him. He played.
He's a real block finisher. This is by
yes.
And that's like what I like about him. I just think
he has good bend and leverage too. He's just a really natural fit with his movement skills for zone blocking.
I think he plays really hard and his pass sets are too clean. I don't think they'll move him inside. Like it's hard to say. Like
he has experience yes at guard and center too, though.
Yes, but and people think he might move all the way to center, which
he had 430 snaps at center in 2020.
This happened with that Northwestern guy. What was his name?
Ben Skoranek.
But everyone was like, let's move this guy inside. And I just think if you have technique like this and toughness like this and athleticism, people will just keep you at guard because it's too valuable to just keep you at guard. Does that make sense? To keep you at tackle. They'll keep you at tackle because it's too valuable to not move you inside. NFL did list him as a center, though, in their rankings. So maybe you're right. NFL.com. But I just have a feeling he's just going to stick.
Yeah, I think he's kind of in that Nick Martin territory where it's like he could be an okay. Like, I feel like Skoranek had more tackle traits. Barton's in that situation where he could play tackle and be a capable tackle, but he could be like an all-pro guard. And so I think a playoff team from this last year, like if he slipped to the second round, he'd get drafted by somebody and play right tackle.
It's Peter Skoronski, by the way. The Skoronek thing was throwing me off.
Yeah,
because I was thinking, like, that's the wide receiver.
Wide receiver.
Yeah, but anyway, continue. Yes, just so the people that are yelling at their radio in their car right now are less mad.
I just wanted to correct that. My number three guy is Zach Frazier, the center out of West Virginia.
Okay,
I also think is a back of round one, very early round two guy.
Zach Frazier strikes me personally as the kind of guy who is like very nearly capped.
He's your favorite kind of guy because he got better every year.
Yeah, but like he hit the ceiling, in my opinion. Like, especially when he didn't do any athletic testing and then he runs 5.240 at an event, and it's like, yeah, this guy's just not gonna be like an incredible athlete. And I don't know. He's team versatile, he's scheme versatile, he will be a good NFL football
State
player.
Champion wrestler.
I'm not even denying that. I just worry long term. About like where I had him third, so I'm not like strongly disagreeing with you or anything. I just like he falls into a category.
Be gone before, but by pick 40, he should be gone. And if he's picked somewhere around like 30th, I think that's a solid use of a pick.
In this IOL group, there's guys: him, Christian Haynes, Cooper Beebe. These guys are good football players. Don't get me wrong, but they feel like they're close to what they will be. That Cooper Beebe ran a 7.443 cone, and I was like, well, I guess I have to take him more seriously. So that's why I put second was Cooper Beebe. Even though his arms are short, his hands are short, like there definitely are problems, and he does fall over on the tape, which I know is like your kryptonite. You hate it so much.
Yeah, but
anytime a guy's on his
over because he was asked to play right tackle, like he's never going to be asked to play tackle in like no. I feel like if you set him up to play one position, his footwork will be better to balance. So it didn't bother me as much because he like Kansas State asked him to be everyone.
Yeah, and for me, like BB feels like a back of the end of round two guy, like a guy you take like pick 55 and you're pretty happy about it.
Yeah,
that's my Cooper Beebe, and that's the guy I had number two.
If he's the kind of guy that could end up falling just because he's not super impressive in any way, and then he just shows up as the starting left guard somewhere for 10 years, and you're like, oh yeah, Cooper Beebe, he's good.
I mean, I think that three cone might have made him money. Like,
yes,
a 7.443 cone is pretty limber for an OG. Another athletic testing guy ended up fourth for me.
So Frazier was your third?
Frazier
was third. So you have JPJ, BB, Frazier. Okay, who's your fourth?
Christian Mahogany.
He's my fifth.
Fifth? Okay, yeah. Christian Mahogany jumped real high, did a nice shuttle, did a nice broad jump. His three cone was a little slow, but we saw DK. Some people can get over it. He's a good mover. He's just shaky in pass protection, doesn't doesn't have that consistency of technique that you need to be like elite in pass protection. And so that'll be where he has to develop if he's going to make it as an NFL player, which is why I think he's like kind of a beginning of round three kind of type of guy. And yeah, I think he's a really good prospect though. He has the athleticism to kind of grow into a role. You just have to hope that he figures it out. Who's your, if he wasn't your number four, who's your number four?
Christian Haynes. I feel like
the other
Haynes
Christian
Mahogany are right there.
Yeah. I had Christian Haynes number five, so I'm right there with you. What'd you like about Haynes?
I think that Haynes is a bit better of a mover.
You know another reason I put him lower? Connecticut? Come on, dude. Connecticut. even Boston College is better than Connecticut. Connecticut.
Really? All right. Really?
ready for some late round guys? There's some athletic testing monsters we get to talk about now. This is the most exciting part of this for me. Some guys did some crazy stuff at the combine. All right, Taylor Bortolini.
If only all that athletic testing transferred into actually being able to block.
Okay, but can we got to go over this. 4.94 40. 4.28. Okay, wait. Actually, let's do percentile.
303 pounds.
Because nobody can contextualize these numbers. Okay, 97th percentile 40, 99th percentile shuttle, 94th percentile 10-yard split, 92nd percentile vertical, 95th percentile broad, and a 98th percentile three cone, which we said 7.3 is the standard. He ran a 7.16. Yeah, this guy's a mover. He's not confident in his skills. That shows up on the tape. His athleticism does not match the tape because he's not confident on the field. But this is a guy you can pick in like round four and just mold him. And the sky is the limit with these athletic distinct testing.
That's numbers. The other thing is he's played all over the line on Wisconsin for a couple of different regimes. And so you could make an argument for if he gets 2 or 3 years on a consistent NFL team to learn a system and develop. Yeah. Developmental center, I think, is an interesting spot for him.
Yeah. Oh, he could play. He might be able to play guard too. You know, you kind of never know.
But he had a lot of snaps at guard. He played like 600 snaps at guard in 2022. He was just a center because he was the only person on Wisconsin that could do a shotgun snap, which is a funny thing to find out. They could do a shotgun snap and could actually play center.
Nick Garguilo, who's really big and has a 7.33 cone. Guy like that. I think once again, he looks like when he plays, he's like a robot and not good at moving.
You're very
kind
stiff.
Kind of like stiff. Yeah.
The three cone is surprising because of how stiff he looks. He either looks like the kind of guy, like I would have thought his athletic testing would have been worse. So I'm wondering if he's just the guy who can't process very well. And so he has to like in his head, he's repeating his coach's instruction to him all the time. What's the line? Major League 2 when he has to like repeat the line from the Playboy magazine so he can remember how to throw to second base?
Yeah. Exactly. I think if you want to draft a guy who you can like plug and play, who is a sufficient enough athlete and stuff, taking a good look at Drake Nugent from Michigan is a guy you definitely take a look at. His three cone makes it and his shuttle make it seem like even though he's small, he probably is a good enough mover to kind of stick around as a solid mid-level, you know, kind of either plus backup or minus starter.
Yeah, like a zone blocking scheme kind of guy where you can handle that slightly undersized center. He could be worst player on a good line.
Pretty flexible too, which I liked.
What'd you think of Bo Limmer out of Arkansas?
Okay, Bo Limmer. Here's my Bo Limmer thing. Yeah, the testing is awesome and stuff. I think he's gonna get drafted higher than most of these guys, and I don't really understand why. Like everywhere I look, he's ranked significantly higher than any of the guys I've talked about, and I don't see like any level of
like ability, higher than the fourth round
refinement. I think this guy could go like if we look at this, PFF has him 117, DraftBuzz has him 123, like so that's like
so fourth round,
you know, fourth round, and I think that's like
that's the highest I'd want him because his hands are a mess and his hands and his feet are never doing the same thing. Like you're a complete technique reset.
He's super inconsistent. I just don't know, but he does have the athleticism. I just, I'd rather see a guy that I feel like is playing tentative and less confident than a guy who like this, who I feel like is like going crazy. Does that make sense? I don't know. Yeah. For me personally, like that's just what I like, that rather than just like this guy who feels completely sloppy and out of control. But
yeah, he was kind of just reliant on being very physically strong. And so it's almost like the guy in college basketball where all he can do is drive and dunk, and he can't really do anything else because he's just relied on being fast and having like good hops.
Any interest in Cedric Van Pran?
I know he's a guy that gets ranked. We drafted him last year. His name was Oluolu Atimi.
Exactly. Why is Cedric Van Pram like a much higher guy than Oluolu? That doesn't make any sense to me.
They're the same. Corporate would like you to find the difference between these two big draft prospects.
How about the Michigan guards, Zinter and Keegan? Did you like these guys?
So Keegan had a few more footwork issues, but I thought he was a little bit more athletic. Zinter is. Zinter's like what I thought Cooper Beebe was going to be, where he's just a guy who kind of knows how to play guard, and he'll probably come in and just be either a like high level backup or like solid like swing guard or something for just a long time. Like he's strong, he's pretty big, he has adequate length, he has a lot of experience. You could tell he knows what he's supposed to do, and he just like, he has good upper body strength, but he couldn't really anchor against interior power because he didn't have the lower body strength you want. But he's at Michigan, so that's basically a pro strength program, so I'm not sure what's going on there. Or, like, he's really stiff in his hips, so he tends to, like, hunch and roll his shoulders. And it's like, okay, so, like, does he not have bend? I don't know. And he's coming off of a broken leg.
Yeah. Did you watch a small school guy, CJ Hansen, Kevin?
No, I didn't get to him.
Okay,
just like beating up guys that are my size all the time?
No, actually, it's like a baby giraffe situation.
Oh no!
but he's really fast, like 5 second 40, 3.5 vertical, 115 inch broad, like elite athlete. But he's just like uncoordinated. So like, I don't know. Like, I think you could take this guy and then like the end and like hide him on your practice squad at a round 7 stash and just be like, hey, maybe something happens here. But probably not. He has NFL level athleticism.
The defensive lineman from Buffalo we converted into a center. I can't think of it, but it's like one of those things.
He has a great headshot. Can I show it? I'm gonna put it in the chat, Kevin. I want you to see this headshot. Look at this guy.
Oh, that's delightful.
This guy's just happy to be here.
They took his hockey headshot and put it in here.
He's just so happy to be here. Most guys like in their headshots are just frowning or like their neutral face. This guy is just, he's loving life. That, I'm not going to lie, Christian Mahogany is the same thing kind of, and I love Christian Mahogany more because of it. So
a picture like that really affects me. Up a guy on me.
It affects me a little bit, even though I know it shouldn't. So yeah. All right. Anything else you want to throw in here before we head to the Patreon money zone?
I think we kind of hit on it. There's a lot of athletes on the interior offensive line that are interesting, and late round flyers could end up being playing above their spot. And I think at tackle, it's the opposite, where there's a lot of guys that have a lot of experience. They're just really, really solid type of players that might be able to come in and just hold down the fort and either be the guy who comes in and gives you like 6 great games when someone's injured, or the guy who comes in is just a really adequate player.
The athleticism level of offensive linemen in general for this draft is pretty high. It's pretty high comparative to what normally you see. Just like when I'm scrolling, I'll scroll like RAS scores, or and I'll scroll like mock draftables, and there's a bunch of sites that compile all these things. Just looking, seeing what's out there, you know, seeing like what numbers guys put up. And then when something pops out, you know, I'll go watch a couple of games. And this level of athleticism is really high in this draft, in a way that makes me think more guys are going to make it than I think, one. But I just don't know where they're coming from, because there's a lot of guys who feel pretty
developmental,
unrefined, and they're young too. There's a lot of young guys, 20, 21. At other positions, there's like all these guys that are like 23, 24, you know, guys who spent like a million years in college. That's not the case with these offensive linemen. They came out this year, I think sensing maybe that this was kind of a weaker draft, and
as a result, it's not.
It's not now. Now it's not a weak draft. They were right. They could come out and get picked, but now it's hard. So okay, Yeah, I'm a big fan overall. I think that if the Seahawks went with any of these positions, I would be pretty happy, because especially the tackles. The tackles are deep this year. At 16, there's going to be a guy who could be a game breaker for us at tackle. And well, so if and they go if they decide to go trenches and go OT, I'm down. I'm super down.
Or if we end up with like a guard and a center in day one and day two, and then like we're sitting there in the fourth round and or the fifth round, and we just get one of these tackles where it's like, yeah, you know, if Abraham Lucas needs to be out for a little while, this guy can just come in and be like very adequate.
Yeah, he's a good athlete, so you know, he can we can try to get him to do something. We have we have 10 weeks to get him ready, you know, until Cross gets hurt. So yeah, all right, let's get into it. There are many ways to support the CXMS podcast. Best way to do so is to join our Patreon, the patreon.com/Seahawks Nest. For as little as $1.24 a month, gain access to the Seahawks Nest Discord and all the I would say crap posting that I do. All right, anyway,
there's Emmanuel, analysis within the crap posting.
My favorite thing to do now is to go on the PFF draft mock draft thing and then just keep kind of refreshing it until I get one where the draft was like completely rigged in my favor, and then post that draft only. And it's like PFF's just like A+, like this is my most recent one. It says, what does it say? Okay, so I picked Byron Murphy to Jordan Morgan in round three, which is ridiculous. Michael Penix in round three, also mildly ridiculous. Christian Mahogany in round four. Michael Hall in round five. Josh Newton in round six. And then James Williams in round seven. They gave me an A+ for every pick, Kevin. Thank you, PFF. I did a great job when you rigged the draft in my favor.
If you keep doing this, I'm going to retaliate with my trade shenanigans drafts.
This is basically my version of that, where I just like crank refresh the randomness up a little bit, and then I just keep refreshing. And yeah, like I had a really good one. It started so good this week. My first pick was Quinyon Mitchell, and I was so pumped because I've never gotten him in a mock yet. And I was like, yes, Quinyon Mitchell. It's like perfect. We'd have the best cornerbacks in the league.
That'd be the dumbest thing in the world.
A million leaps and bounds. Like having Quinyon Mitchell is so good.
Quinyon Mitchell and
Tariq Woolen.
That's so gross.
Put those three guys on the field all the time. Okay, I just want to talk about Quinyon Mitchell a little bit. We haven't done corners.
We will talk about him a lot of it because he's fun.
Who cares? I want to say one thing, which is that you watch the tape with a small school guy, and they usually are pretty good. And you're like, oh yeah, well, he was dominant, but you want him to like clear some bars, right? Like you're like, oh, in the pre-draft process, let's see him clear some of the bars, you know. So first he goes to the Senior Bowl, absolutely dominates, is the talk of the Senior Bowl. Then he goes to the combine, absolutely dominates, becomes the talk of the it's like, yeah, okay, this guy's totally it. Why was he at Toledo?
Guy's interviews?
He's
hilarious.
Was it because he doesn't want to play school? Is that why he was at Toledo?
He didn't answer anything about that. No, it's just like he's one of those guys that is not like super smack talky in the interview, but he's like kind of a funny like guy. But it's always like, you seem like a really kind of laid back guy. Do you talk a lot of smack on the field? He's like, I talk a ton of smack on the field.
All right. So let's thank the Patreons who are now members of the Quinyon Mitchell Hive and the Byron. And the James Worthy Water Chug Club.
The Xavier Worthy Chug Xavier Water Worthy. Club.
James Worthy. Dude, I'm bringing out all the legends today for messed up
names. I can't say anything with my Ben Skoronic take. So I'm
Emmanuel. At least it was a current player. Emmanuel, Andy, Brett, Cooper, do it all for the Tucci, Evan, Floctimus, Gavin, James, Jost, Joshua, Lucas, Malcolm, Ryan, Samuel, Terrence, Timothy, Tom, Warwolf, Astro, Blake, Bob, Carl, Casey, Cracksnacker 420, Daniel, David, Feet Me on Rye, Foles, Jay, Luke, Michelle, Mike, Noah, Poops, Thomas, Werewolf, Brandon, Nick, Chip. Wait, I said Werewolf twice right there, didn't I? Dang it. It's because it was it.
We love him twice.
You know what? No, it's because he moved his Patreon up because he's such a good dude. And then he used to be in the other spot. So I'm just going to, I said it both times. And my brain went on a pile a little bit. All right. Today's going to be Video Game Club.
Wait, before that, do we want to do a restaurant as we've been being asked to?
Oh, yes. Do you want to talk about a Seattle-based restaurant?
Yeah, talk about a Seattle area restaurant that we enjoy. Hey,
did you go to a good restaurant lunch today or no? I don't want to put you on the spot here. You went out to lunch. Did you go to a place that you would say is worthy of this segment or no?
We were going to go to a place that was interesting, but they had an hour wait and we couldn't squeeze in before the podcast. So we did end up going to Shake Shack.
An hour wait?
Yeah, I ain't waiting an hour.
That's absolutely brutal.
We learned that lesson at the screen door.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about Din Tai Fung.
Oh yeah, Din Tai Fung's good. Hour wait though.
Yeah, I'm waiting now for Indy Tai Fung.
It's good. It's good, but like it's not like that good.
So we end up going to the Shake Shack in the
mall. I actually have been to that Shake Shack as well. I thought one, the line was long, but it was actually really fast.
Yes.
And two, Shake Shack was about as good as I remembered, which is to say pretty good. And it was not as expensive as I expected it to be either. You know, I expected to unload like I bought for my family of four. I expected to unload like 80, 90 bucks and it was only like 60. So I was like, okay, that's pretty fair. And the chicken nuggets that my son got were actually like pretty good. So
my brother and I went out for his birthday. My brother, we went a little more expensive. So it was a little more expensive, you went but ham. That's fine.
Dude, I got the iced tea lemonade too. And it was like pretty good.
I got milkshake.
Milkshake. Which flavor did you get? The monthly flavor, or did you get just like a classic?
No, I got the cookies and cream because it was the right combination. I got the black and white. That was good too.
Big shout out to Todd. Todd is a OG. Smokestack. I got the smokestack when I went too. That's the one I've gotten before.
I think it's a very quintessential burger.
Yeah, the thing is, I think like next time I would want to try something different. Like I knew it was good. I knew what I was getting into, but like I was like, they had a Korean barbecue burger. I should have just got it.
I got the one that's because their mushroom burger. They have like a fried shiitake mushroom.
Yeah, yeah. My wife got it. It's so good.
Okay,
they have to put a warning on top. Oh, that's ridiculous, Kevin.
It was so good.
They put a warning on top of that thing because the cheese inside is so hot, it will burn your tongue. And my wife is like, they put like a little flag in it that's like, be careful, don't eat this. It's like, but you just served it to me to eat. Well, I don't understand.
Did you have a bite of it? That is such a good mushroom.
It's so good. They just like stuff that thing with full of cheese. It's so good. I can't imagine with the whole burger on there. That seems like borderline too much. But well, because
it's basically like a two-patty burger. Only this is one patty, and then the other patty is a mushroom. It's a life experience. If you like mushroom burgers, you should have.
All right, yeah, I dig it. I'm trying to think of like a restaurant that I've been to.
Have you been to Rumba? Because that was the one I was gonna do. Mm-mm. So Rumba's a little tapas place, rum bar that's across from the convention center Pike in downtown. Nice. They have good rum. You can get rum tasting flights. They have very good selection. Their theme, the pricing is really good, and the food is really good. If you're downtown and you want to have like a happy hour experience, go to Rumba downtown. Get a flight of rum, get a mixed drink, have some, like their sliders were good, their tacos were good. Yes. And it's like a little bit tight, but it's tight in that if you go to a small place for happy hour, it just feels that way. I highly recommend that one.
I'll go one too. Over the Moon Cafe. It's like a date Ooh. Spot in Opera Alley in Tacoma. That's really good. Okay.
Their desserts are like very interesting.
All right. So let's talk about Baldur's Gate 3. If you don't want us to spoil any aspect of the game, turn the podcast off. We'll see you next week. Go Hawks. All right. We are playing this game together. Me, Kevin, and Brett sometimes, and our friend Shane. Brett shows up, I would say 75% hit rate. You're probably right. It's right about half. But what's funny is that we kind of used the character Shadowheart as his stand-in character, and then we made her so mad she left our party.
Yep.
Brett only shows up half the time. So the person So basically, we ended up
having to respec Gale into someone who could fill his spot in the party by being a bard.
Yeah, because we're like, we need someone to heal us a little bit.
Because I'm playing a paladin, but like, I ain't all that on heals.
No, and I'm playing a monk. It's okay. So let's just talk about this game though, in general. What I love about Baldur's Gate, this game is ready for you to do anything.
Yes,
in a way that almost every game ever made is not. Like this game,
it takes open world to the extreme of the meaning. Like you are in this world, go do stuff.
You can kill anyone. You can make any gameplay choices and dialogue choices you want without any fear of like the game's not going to know what to do or it's going to spit me to a game over screen because I chose wrong. That ain't happening.
Like, so
they're ready.
Character at like one of the plot pivot points where you can either team up with them and you officially have decided you're starting an evil campaign, or you can kill them and then you're kind of siding with at least for now the side of good. In our group game, I decided to yeet her off a cliff, which is definitely choice C. At which point it didn't change us from killing her, but it certainly made the experience feel different.
What I like is that
those little moments too.
What I like is that I had looked up what items she was carrying when you did that. And then I was like, oh, she's holding a really good magic item. And then not more than 3 seconds later, Kevin kicks her off of a cliff and she's gone forever. And I was like, well, guess we're not getting that. It's like, oh, well, that's pretty much where that's over now. So we're not getting that. And then, yeah.
If there's a path that looks like you can go down, you can. If there's someone who exists, you can kill them.
They can die too. Like, we had a character that felt pretty important to the plot, and we were in a battle where she was fighting too, and she died. And I was like, well, we didn't even see her die. I think she died on the last turn, or she died after the battle ended. She was walking into a trap or something, and say, yep, that's the joke we make every time. Somebody's not gonna be in Baldur's Gate 4. Nope, not in Baldur's Gate 4 for us. So, yeah, it is a blast to play. Our player characters are all equally ridiculous. Shane, our friend, is trying to make his character look as stupid as possible, and he's doing a very good job. There's writing all over his character's face for some reason, and he's got a
full-on Mike Tyson face tattoo,
and he's a halfling. And he wears the dumbest clothes.
Also, I didn't know this until now, but he has CJ Hansen's mustache. I have now figured out after Nathan posted CJ Hansen's picture.
Yes,
exactly. The Holy Cross offensive guard.
I'm playing a monk named Tall Gravy, which was one of the best reveals of the entire campaign, even though it was on the first day. I was like, hey, what'd you guys name your characters? Did you guys give your characters a name? And everyone's like, oh yeah, I named my character, I think this, and I named my character this, and they're all relatively normal names. And then I was like, oh yeah, I gave my character a normal name. And then Shane just goes, Tall Gravy.
Which officially makes the dialogue better on multiple occasions.
It's just so funny.
So in a lot of these games, they'll give you dialogue options, and you'll pick your dialogue option. You'll be like, I think that this is going to be the snarky option. The worst game about this ever is L.A. Noire.
Mass Effect is the worst one. Okay, L.A. Noire is really bad too.
Where you'll be like, I'm going to pick this, and then your character just
starts yelling really at horrible. The person that he's a child molester.
Yes, exactly.
That's actually a thing that happens in that game, by the way.
So in this game, you'll pick an option and it works exactly the way you think it is. So if you want to be antagonistic, you just can be. There are so many custom dialogue options based on your class, your race, decisions you've made earlier in the game that can change what you can say and do. It's really enjoyable that way.
And just little stuff too. Like there's a monster, and he's in a brewery. And so we go in and I talk to him. And instead of fighting him, I could challenge him to a drinking contest, basically, and drink his weird, spirit potion or whatever, his brew. And I was just like, okay, I'm a monk, so I have advantage on all these rolls. Let's go for it. Let's do the guy. And he just kept yelling at me to drink more stuff. It's hilarious. The game has so many little things like that where it's just funny stuff. Yeah,
the enlightened troll that is leading the other trolls in the abandoned town. There's all these things where did they need to put this as dialogue off the gnome merchant that's tied to the windmill?
Yeah.
And if you accidentally press the wrong button instead of stopping the windmill, you send him flying and the character disappears forever.
Yep. You can send him into the shadow realm 100%. I think it's a really cleverly made game. It's really fun. It captures the spirit of really good role playing, not necessarily even Dungeons and Dragons, but just role playing in general, which is that sometimes you just make the decision you want to make, and it's stupid and silly and goofy, but it's the fun decision to make.
Matt Colville, who's a social media D&D guy or tabletop guy, has a line that is, it's not a DM's job to solve the player's problem. It's a DM's job to solve the player's solutions. And this game embodies that to a level I've never seen a video game, where clearly they're just okay, if someone goes ham, what does that look like? Okay, we just need to set parameters so that whatever that looks like, the game can handle it.
And then also, people will mention stuff you did, and you're like, dang, that had consequences. Like, there were, like, a bunch of people would come up to her like, oh, we heard you killed all of those goblins. And we're like, yeah, we really did kill, like, all of those goblins. That's true. And we didn't have to do that. We just did.
Did.
Because we wanted, mostly because we wanted to level up. There was, like, yeah, there was no other reason to do it. We were just like, hey, this is a real great place for us to get two levels. Let's just go ahead and get all of these guys. Oh, man. It is super fun. What's been your highlight so far of any of the campaigns? What's your favorite moment so far? Man,
there's a lot of really good ones. Honestly, I just think in general, working together to solve the puzzles. Mm-hmm. Like, the puzzles are the
like when we got
is
that
this
mace?
Puzzle hard, or is the game just janky? Like, both. That question is one of my favorite questions, because normally when a game's kind of janky, you're like, this is frustrating. In this game, you're like, maybe this is just really clever. And then you're like, oh, wait, no, that turns out this lighting thing is broken.
And also, there's like, there's always like a really stupid way to like cheat too, to cheat your way through, yes, everything. And it's fun to try to figure that out. It's like, and that's like real D&D too. You just ruin the DM's plans by cheating. And like Shane was like, oh, I'll just fly over there. It's like, oh yeah, I guess skip the puzzle and just fly over there. That sounds cool too. Yeah, do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love it. I've been having a great time.
Yeah, there's another like floor puzzle where it was just like, let's just try and put them all symmetrical and see if that works. And then we just made them all symmetrical and hit the button, and it was like, oh, it turns out that's what it needed to be.
We don't really know, but yeah, it's been a great time. It's a highlight of Monday nights for me. So anyway, all right, that's it. Try Baldur's Gate 3 if you are interested in like role playing games, or
if you love Skyrim and you want a game made in the last 15 years.
Yes, this feels like the next step of. I think here's the thing is, I think games will try to copy this CRPG style storytelling, but it's just really hard. Very few games recently have pulled it off. Notably, like, what's that one where you're like a drunk detective and you're trying to impress your Asian cop partner? What's that game called? CRPG. If I just Google CRPG games, it's going to come up.
Okay, Cyberpunk, now that it's fixed, does this?
Oh, Disco Elysium.
Oh,
Disco,
yeah.
Elysium, I feel like, is like a. And then Divinity, Original Sin. But like, none of them do it quite like Baldur's Gate. I think it's a really difficult style to pull off, and they pull it off with flair. So, all right, that's it. Thanks, yep, to Kevin and the ghost of Eric Ronnebeck. We will see you all next week. Go Hawks.